And now for a preview of some of the biggest and most interesting international stories of the week, we turn to our colleagues at the BBC for our weekly conversation. Today is Rob Hugh-Jones with us. Rob, thanks as always.
Thank you, Steve.
So as we look ahead this week to the 20th anniversary of 9/11, we continue to see further U.S. and other Western diplomatic efforts to help get people out of Afghanistan. Of course, we've seen these images for the last week or so. What is the latest you can tell us about things on the ground there?
Yeah, well, in Afghanistan itself, the Taliban, of course, have taken over. Your listeners will know that. The question is, how much have they taken over? They claim to have taken the last pocket of resistance to them, which is the Panjshir Valley or Panjshir province north of Kabul, though some resistance fighters there claim to have made ground. But really, what the Taliban is doing right now is consolidating their gains, and they can be expected to announce the outline of some government or their government soon, national government. Yesterday, a Taliban spokesman said they would bring peace and stability. And when that was in place, he said they would implement projects with China to help stimulate the Afghan economy, which is in dire straits. So you can see, you know, Taliban is kind of working with whoever it can, its allies outside. So China will certainly be an economic ally. Pakistan, there are big questions about what kind of an ally Pakistan will be. There are protests today in Kabul, people objecting to what they see as Pakistani influence in helping the Taliban fight some of these resistance fighters. Pakistan denies that. But that's kind of the scene, if you like, of what's going on inside the country. And of course, we're seeing ongoing protests for women's rights and humanitarian rights and so on.
Well, so does the West have a particular strategy at this point then to follow up?
Well, that's it. So in parallel with all this, we have the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Qatar today, which sits right next to Saudi Arabia on the Persian Gulf. The capital is Doha. Now, the reason he's there in Qatar is because Qatar has been immensely useful to the U.S. in evacuating people from Afghanistan. Blinken said that some 58,000 people airlifted out of Afghanistan have gone through Qatar. The U.S. has a major air base there. And so many of the people who got out of the country traveled first to Qatar, and Blinken said, you know, no other country has done more than Qatar to help the mission. So he's really there to thank Qatar. He'll be in Germany tomorrow to thank the Germans, because many people came through the Ramstein Air Base in Germany and other parts of Germany in the evacuation of Afghanistan. But really, you have to look at it now from the geopolitical point of view. You know, who has America got? Who's the West got? Who can put some sort of pressure on the Taliban, who can exert influence? And why would they want to do that? Well, they want to do it because they want a stable Afghanistan. They want to ensure that they have some kind of a relationship with the Taliban going forward. They want to ensure that Afghanistan doesn't descend into a humanitarian catastrophe with enormous numbers of refugees flooding the area and destabilizing the region. And of course, they want to ensure that a Taliban-controlled Afghanistan never again becomes a haven for an attack like 9/11. So, you know, there's a lot of U.S. interest in ensuring some sort of a relationship and some sort of stability. And I think part of Blinken's trip to the Middle East, to Qatar today, and to Germany tomorrow, sort of underlines, you know, America's really getting out there and shaking hands with people and looking who are its allies in terms of communicating with a new Afghanistan.
Rob, let's move on to a very important international trial that begins tomorrow in Paris. The attacks in 2015, I think people remember the incredible scenes there that saw 130 people killed. This is a major trial, though clearly last month's. What do we need to know about this?
Yes, well, tomorrow, Wednesday, the trial of 20 people charged over the 2015 attacks in Paris, which happened on November the 13th in that year. To remind your listeners, this was France's deadliest peacetime atrocity. I mean, this was their 9/11, effectively. A night of carnage, 130 people killed, 350 wounded, suicide bombers, gunmen attacking the Stade de France in Paris, bars, restaurants, and the Bataclan concert hall, people will probably remember. Now, just one of the suspected perpetrators, a French-Belgian man called Salah Abdel Salam, will appear in court, but 19 others are accused of providing various logistical support. Six of them are targets of arrest warrants and will be tried in absentia. The other attackers, including the suspected coordinator, were killed in the wake of the attacks, which were, you know, claimed by extremists, as you remember, from the Islamic State group. So this is a massive story in France, and we're certainly going to see a lot in the news, the international news, this coming week about this one.
And now we'll take a deep breath and we'll turn to the arts for something very different. A painting by the Dutch master Vermeer will be grabbing the headlines on Thursday. Rob, tell us why.
Yes, I quite like this. Gets us away from geopolitics, doesn't it, and war and so on. But it's interesting that a famous painting by the Dutch master Vermeer, and this guy lived between 1632 and 1675. He lived to about 42 years of age. And he really wasn't recognized in his own lifetime. He was recognized a long time after as being kind of one of the great Dutch masters. And I think it's something like 30 paintings that are now attributed to him. But this particular painting will appear as he intended it to for the first time in more than 300 years when it goes on display in Dresden in Germany later this week. The painting is called The Girl Reading a Letter at the Open Window. It was completed sometime between 1657 and 2 years later. However, an X-ray of that painting taken in the 1970s revealed a naked Cupid in the background. And it was discovered that this had been added to the work several years after Vermeer's death. So a very painstaking restoration has been going on in Dresden to remove this layer of overpainting, if you like. So now this work, which is priceless, will go on display along with another 9 paintings by Vermeer in Dresden. But interestingly, it'll go on display in its original form, in other words, in the way in which the artist originally painted it. As to who painted the nude Cupid after Vermeer's death, that apparently is still a mystery, and scholars and so on are looking into that.
Wonderful way to end our conversation. Rob Hugh-Jones of the BBC, thanks as always.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Good morning. It's the show on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Steve Goldstein.